This is Turn One Thought Seas. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Zach.
And this is episode 81, Core 19 Preview Show.
Come on, man! Bring it!
We will be talking about the Core 19 previews. And also talking about metagame stuff, because it's weird out there right now. Like, it's good weird, but
there's a lot going on.
It's weird.
There is a it's lot weird. Going on.
So we'll walk you through that, and then the Core 19 stuff. As of this recording, there are about 9/12 of the way through. That's a weird.
Yeah, fraction. That's a really bad fraction. Okay. I think it's like 9/10, man. There's like a lot of commons left, but I think we got most of the cards that matter.
I think we have most of the good ones. Fair. Strong agree. So 15/16, let's say.
Okay. That works, I guess. That's a real fraction.
It is a real fraction. So Vegas, KCI, I was disgusted, happy for Matt Nass. I pointed this out on Twitter, but I do want to point it out here. As much as I loathe, mega loathe that deck, I do not dislike its players at all. Matt Nass is a very accomplished player. I've never met him, but I'm sure he's a very personable guy. I've seen him stream a couple times.
I actually met him at the last Pro Tour. He's a super nice guy. Very kind. There you go. Very approachable, too. If you ever see him and you want to, you know, ask him a question, just go say hi.
There you go. And Zach Elsick, same thing, right? Like, I'm a big fan of Zach. I'm very pro-Zach. I'm very anti-KCI. So that said, you take the W, right? That's two paydays in a row for Matt Nass playing that deck. No,
I think he lost in the top eight in like the last modern event he played, but he won the one before that too. So it was like, okay, he like won one, top eighted and lost in like the quarters or something, and then won another. It's pretty wild.
Sir. So he's up conservatively $50,000.
Yeah, something like that.
Playing this dumb deck.
I mean, he is on one of the biggest hot streaks you've ever seen in Modern. I can't remember another player having a streak like this in ever, honestly, in Modern.
It's pretty insane. That said, humans, still great. I don't think anybody who is playing humans right now, it should like set the deck on fire. Like, it's still good. It's going to get harder. Like, you're gonna start feeling like affinity players, which is your deck is really good. Because it's really good, everybody is going to be prepared for it, and you just need to like work on the next level plan of what do I do to beat the hate.
Well, humans has like two very interesting things going for it, and one is that it's a difficult deck to hate. It's not like every card in your deck is an artifact, so you know they can't just play Stony Silence or Shatterstorm or Ancient Grudge and just be very favored against you, right? But you do kind of rely on ETBs, so like it's kind of possible to hate them that way. But the problem is the deck is just so efficient, it's so disruptive, it's very hard. It's got the whole like Jund situation going on where it's, you know, you can play good cards against Jund, but they can just thought seize whatever, you know, hate card you bring in against them or whatever. So it's kind of right. What humans has, where it's like, well, you know, you can play your Torpor Orb, but you know, they might just have their Reclamation Sage that's already on their sideboard, or they might, you know, just freeboot it out of your hand before you can play it. Like, you can bring in hate cards, but they don't always quite get there because, and also like the deck just doesn't fold the hate cards necessarily. Like, you still just lose to Mantis Rider sometimes. And then on top of that, humans has this other thing going for it where every time they print a new human, they can play it because it's a five-color deck. And if you look at new sets coming out, there's always humans in them. So it just seems like the deck just keeps getting better.
Yes. For reference, in Core 19, there are at least 27 new humans. Now, granted, are they all playable? No. But maybe. There's a 1-mana 2/3.
That one's definitely not playable in humans.
Is not. I like this one though. Skilled animator. There's a
I mean, that one could be very real.
It's a 3-drop human artificer. When it enters the battlefield, target artifact you control becomes an artifact creature with base power and toughness 5/5 as long as a skilled animator remains on the battlefield. He's a 1/3. I'm not completely uninterested in this. Like the idea of like Vial on 3, end step, Vial this guy in, make your Aether Vial a 5/5 and then untap and swing with him. I'm pretty into it. I like this guy.
I think it's definitely a real card. I mean, the thing is that like a lot of these humans aren't actually very good for the deck, but it's just like every set they just get more, and it's like we're gonna look at them later, but there are definitely cards in here that the humans deck could find themselves interested in. You know, like I don't think there's any slam dunks like, oh boy, the deck is revolutionized, but there are definitely cards in here. It's like, well, you know, I can envision a scenario where the humans deck wants this card specifically, so it's like, you know, they just keep getting those, and it's like one of the limiting factors of the deck right now is the sideboard can only be so good. Like, you can't, you're kind of like stuck just playing humans. Like, it's kind of all you can really do, right? Like, that's right. Just all your mana base allows for. So it's like you only really have hate cards for whatever creatures with type human provide you, right? It's like you can play some stuff, and you see them too kind of reaching. They're playing like Reclamation Sage and Kataki, like creatures that they can cast, but it's not really great in their deck. And like, you know, as more and more humans get printed, they'll get better and better hate cards. So the deck is just getting better.
Yes. And yeah. And there's never not going to be humans in a set.
I think it is the most popular creature type in all of Magic.
Pretty safely say that.
That said, it is actually declining in popularity a little bit. It seems like it's kind of hit its full like metagame adaption. Like, it is as popular now as it should be, sitting around, you know, 10% of decks played, which is, you know, a very high number for Modern, so I don't really expect it to be too much more played than that. It's just going to get...
I wonder if it was just like a new hotness kind of thing where people that didn't have the deck picked it up, and then it doesn't have that same like hardcore following as Affinity, where even though it is a deck that is difficult to play, like more difficult game, like game 2, game 3, that they just, people haven't stuck with it in the same way.
But I don't think that's happening.
Like, on to the next.
I think there is some amount of that, but I think it's mostly just that it's a new deck. Like, it's hard to have a, you know, hardcore dedicated following when the deck's only existed like 6 months or whatever. So yeah. I think we'll see it. I mean, it's just going to be a player in Modern going forward. Like, it's here to stay. That's pretty clear, at least until something in the metagame changes. And I think we will start to see those players, just people that just become, you know, human guy. Which is, right, you know, weird to say, but, you know, the guy at your local store that plays humans or whatever. And I think we're going to start seeing that more. It's just, you know, as of right now, people are still, you know, picking up the deck, getting the cards for it. It's becoming more and more popular. So, I mean,
Meddling Mage is just getting more and more expensive.
Yeah, that card won't stop going up. It needs a reprint pretty bad.
Yes, with original art, please.
Yeah, the other art for it's pretty bad, so... Any of it would be good.
Yeah.
But that said, the humans, like, its meta share was, like, continuing to increase every single week. And last weekend was kind of, I think, the first time we didn't see it increase in a while. It was still there. It didn't go down, but it also, I don't feel like it increased.
Yeah. Kind of stayed the same. Like, by the top level numbers, kind of stayed the same.
It's just sitting right there right at 10%.
Yep. And I think that's fine. Who are all these people playing blue-white control?
That was me. Like, I played blue-white control earlier this week.
just you?
Well, but I was one. I played.
They're not winning.
I played a really bad blue-white control deck. It was awful, but it was fun.
Like, they're just, like, people are playing it, but they're not doing well with it. So,
oh, you want to talk about playing it and not doing well? Let me throw this out there for you. What if you took blue-white control, which is already a deck with very limited good cards in it?
Sure.
And then you cut a bunch of the good cards? And you just added Time Walks. Well, and then you played blue-white taking turns, but, like, you weren't fully a taking turn deck, so, like, when you started going off, you didn't, like, keep going off. You just kind of fizzle. But you also, like, didn't really have a way to take advantage of going off. So you just kind of were a deck that had Teferi and Time Walks in it, so, like, sometimes it was good.
Oh, that sounds like legit trash.
Oh, the deck was really, really bad. It was really... I had one game, though, where I played Teferi and then started Time Walking, and it was really fun.
One game? How many games did you play?
I played a full league. I went, I think, like 1-10, something like that. Nice. The deck was not good, but it was fun. I played Terminus and Temporal Mastery and Jace, though, and that was sweet.
Ugh. That doesn't sound
It wasn't good.
Okay. So don't play that deck. I mentioned it just because there was a big pop in blue-white control, apparently, across
I think it's because they're starting to add, like, the metagame is just starting to look at blue-white control, and Jeskai is kind of the same deck, and now it's just, like, Celestial Colonnade control.
Yeah. What else? What else was at the GP? Tron?
I mean, it was KCI and Tron. That was the story of Vegas.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of the top 16 decks were Tron. And then there was 3 KCI, 2 humans, Rando, Jeskai Control, Death Shadow, and 1 Hollow One. Oh, Siggy. Missed top 8. Rip. But that deck's still good. Also.
Yeah, I mean.
So let's not count that one out.
I think the real story here is KCI. Like, Matt Nass won again, but there were a bunch of other KCI pilots that also started doing well. There's actually becoming different builds of the deck. Like, there's an Emrakul version and a Pyrite Spellbomb version. I mean, they're both.
Right. The Spellbomb version is, like, the more pure combo in the sense that, like, you have to go off completely. Whereas the version that Eli Cassis played, you can sort of like kind of go off and all you have to do is get to 15 instead of getting to like the full loop. And then you can go, okay, bam. He was also playing 2 copies of the Antiquities War main. My guess is that the Antiquities War main is probably not like, quote unquote, strictly speaking, correct. The Emrakul, I could take or leave. I mean, I think it's a fine alternate win con, but do you need it?
Like, I think you don't need it in real life, which is what Matt Nass has been advocating. But I think if you're playing the deck on Magic Online, you do need it because the deck's so hard. It's just so many clicks on Magic Online. It's kind of like impossible to do with the chess clock. So I think it's a relic of just playing online. I mean, it's kind of just like easy mode where it's like, you don't actually have to execute the combo that many times. You can kind of just play KCI, sack 8 artifacts, and you cast Emrakul and win, which not that hard to do in the deck. So, I wouldn't add, like, I think if you're picking up the deck, you want to start with the Emrakul version and then move towards Matt Nass's, just win with Pirate Spellbound version. But I think overall, it's starting to look like this is one of the strongest decks in all of Modern. I mean, you don't go on a run like Matt Nass has gone on without this deck being just actually busted. I mean, it has to be very good to just continually beat everything you play against, right?
Yeah, I think there is a component of it, which is when you are coming in, like, if you can't, I wouldn't expect to like top 8 off of no buys with it. Well, right? Like, there's a built-in kind of, you already have to be somebody that does well as a general statement, and then have this be like your specialty. And because it's not like everyday Joe is picking up this deck, right? Like Eli Cassis,
sure,
Matt Nass, like they are very good players in their own right. Matt Nass is a well-known like combo player in general, and this deck in specific.
Look, but player Aaron, like I agree with you that like if you want to win a Magic tournament, you have to be good at Modern, right? Or if you want to win a Modern tournament, you have to be good at Magic. That's what I'm trying to say, I guess. So I totally agree with you in that sense, but I have seen players that I don't think are, like, you know, world-class necessarily. I think they're good players, but I wouldn't say they're world-class. Just pick up this deck, and I watched one of my friends go 12-3 at a team. I think it was GP Toronto with it, or 12-2 or something with a did-not-finish. But the point is the deck is very strong, and I think kind of what's really going on here is just, there just isn't hate. People just aren't playing the right hate cards for this deck. You just aren't seeing them. I mean, look at this whole top 8 and really the top 16. Like, how many copies of Stony Silence or Rest in Peace are in this altogether? Like,
I would guess 1.
I think actual 0.
Let me look here.
I think there's actually 0. There's like a Damping Sphere.
Yeah, Ruined Halo, Damping Sphere.
Ruined Halo doesn't do anything against the deck, by the way.
How so? Ruined Halo, name, Pirate, Spellbomb.
That's not going to do anything against this deck, I promise. It seems like it would be good, and then they just cast engineer explosives for two, pop it, and then they start killing the pirate spell bomb. Like, once it's going off, it's so easy for this deck to answer anything. Like, once it goes gigantic, it just goes so arbitrarily big that it's like, hate cards don't work. It's like, you need to stop them from going off to begin with, which is why, like, Stony Silence or Damping Sphere, and also, like, Rest in Peace are kind of the way to go, whereas, like, and also Ceremonious Rejection is a good hate card for it. It's not terrible. But, like, Ancient Grudge is a horrible hate card. It does not really work against this deck. A Braid also is the type of card where it's just like, you know, you have these cards, but it doesn't actually stop the deck. Like, Colgan's Command, like, people think these cards are hate cards for the deck, and they just aren't. And they are very good against Affinity. They're, like, legitimately very good against that deck. And I think that's kind of what is making this deck tick right now, is that, you know, people play a Braid, they play Ancient Grudge, and they use them to beat Affinity, and they think that's good enough, but the truth is that this deck doesn't care about those effects, and it's kind of skating by on the fact that people aren't playing the hard hate.
Mm-hmm. Trying to think. Kotaki.
Kotaki is good.
Did okay.
Kotaki is good against the deck.
It did okay.
But Kotaki's not great. Kotaki's just fine. It just buys time until they find a removal spell. The thing is like, you also need a clock, whereas, like, Stony Silence against this deck just hardcore shuts it down. I mean, this deck has so much trouble with Stony Silence, it's ridiculous.
Sure.
Like, unless they have exactly the Nature's Claim, they just aren't beating Stony Silence. There's just nothing they can do.
Yeah, how many Nature's Claims are there? Well, I mean, they've Aether Grid out of the side.
I mean, they have, like, look, they have things that they can do, but, like, the point is, like, once you put the Stony Silence down, like, their main answer to this is Engineered Explosives. Like, they use Engineered Explosives to answer everything because it's just already good in their deck's plan anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the fact that Engineering Explosives just can't answer a Stony Silence is what makes that card so good against this deck.
Yeah. Play more Stony Silence, you nerds.
But the other thing, too, is, like, in this top 8, we saw Tron. Like, Tron is everywhere. This deck is very popular. It is just a good deck. Tron is it's a very good deck. It's a mana denial deck. Yeah. It's doing very, very powerful things.
Well, I think the other thing that is very good against KCI is Oblivion Stone.
Oblivion Stone is all right. Like, it is good.
Having everything blown up at the same time, so you'll end up getting, like, you'll still get if you have Scrap Trawler and Mirror Retriever in play and you're not already going off, then you've lost anyway. So,
well, like, Oblivion Stone is good. It's like a way that Tron can interact with the deck, but really, like, the way Tron is going to beat KCI is you play a quick Karn or you play a quick Ulamog and you stop them from casting KCI to begin with. Like, that's, right. You just have to, you know, be faster. And that's kind of what Tron is looking to do against that deck. And that's kind of just like what Tron has been doing in general recently, is it's just like this turbo, you know, turbo Karn, turbo Ulamog, Stone Rain you out of the game, play giant things and kill you. And,
right.
You know, there are times when that's not good enough, but right now it's very good and Tron's really popular. And when Tron and KCI are both dominating, you should probably play some Stony Silences.
Yes. Something aggro with white in it. Or just something that's so aggressive that it doesn't matter. Because you can, I mean, like, not for nothing, like, they do still have to cast a 4-mana artifact.
Yeah.
So it's not like you have zero turns to figure it out. You have a little bit of time. And there are definitely quick openings from very aggressive decks, like, for example, Goblins, Infect, Dredge, Bloom Titan. Like, that, the Vegas stuff sort of leads into the Modern PTQ that was on MTGO, which Goblins won, by the way. A very sweet, the mana base, it's like, just trips me out. I'm so excited about this. 18 lands, 12 fetch lands, 6 mountains, end of list. Done.
It's awesome.
Burning Tree Emissary, Fanatical Firebrand, my boy. My monkey son. I've always had, like, a very complicated relationship with Mog Fanatic, because it, when it's good, it's really, really good. And when it's bad, it's just, like, sad and pathetic. Fanatical Firebrand kind of, like, has a nice little middle ground, because it has haste.
Sure. I think that card's kind of the worst card in the deck, but I think the deck's just so hungry for one drops that it's fine. It's just a fine card.
4/4 Founder Sheet Denizen, very standard. Goblin Bushwhacker, Goblin Guide, 4 Grim Lava Mancers in the main.
Yeah, I think that's what actually made this deck good, was this deck would have had a really, really, really hard time with humans. Except you have four main deck Grim Lavamancers, so it's not actually that hard to beat humans. You can just kind of shoot everything down, and you have all these fetches and a quick clock. I think the deck's really powerful. It's really quick. It's actually picked up a ton on Magic Online since this win. I played a league yesterday where I played it three times.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, so Firebrand also helps against humans, right? Like, pick off they play Champion of the Parish or Noble Hierarch on one. You play this guy, shoot him down. It's amazing. Because then your follow-up of, like, Burning Tree Emissary, like, craziness, Legion Loyalist, Reckless Bushwhacker, is they just lose. It does play Devastating Summons. This is a card that people may not be familiar with. Devastating Summons is a Rise of the Eldrazi classic. Single red sorcery as an additional cost. Sacrifice X lands. And then you put 2 XX red elemental creature tokens onto the battlefield. It does a couple of things. It gives you some big creatures, potentially. It also gives you something to do with fetch lands that don't have anything to get anymore. Like, you only play 6 mana producing lands. So there are a non-zero number of times where you're just going to end up with a bunch of fetch lands that can't do anything. Sack them Devastating Summons. They also, those lands then fuel Grim Lavamancer, and on and on and on. 3 Goblin Grenade,
It does do those things, but in my experience playing against it online the past, like, 2 days, it mostly just does one thing really, really well, which is on turn 3, you make 2 3/3s and then trigger the Goblin Bushwhacker? It's either Goblin Bushwhacker or Reckless Bushwhacker. Surge cost on it. Yep. You just turn it so it just has, just make 2 4/3 hastes out of nowhere, which is just ridiculous. It's really, really strong with Bushwhacker.
Yeah, one mana for 2 Vengevines. Seems good. 3 Goblin Grenades, 4 Lightning Bolts. Obviously, sideboard surprisingly tight.
It's like, how many sideboard cards, like, does Mono Red actually even get, you know?
Well, it's 3 Damping Spheres, 2 Dismembers, 4 Goblin Chain Whirler. Another, like, interesting, this comes in against, like, Merfolk and Storm, hilariously.
Mardu Pyromancer?
Mardu Pyromancer, yeah, like, there's a ton of stuff. If you weren't tired of playing against Chain Whirler in Standard, guess what? He's a modern player, baby. 4 Smash the Smithereens, because it does all the things. And 2 Flame of Keld, which is another sort of, like, early setup card for a lot of the really explosive turn. So if you set this up early, discard your hand. So, like, you got this and a bunch of lands, right? Like, you're on a crappy mulligan or something. You take this, you play it, you dump all the trash, draw 2 cards, and then the turn after you just get in. And even if you don't get in with a ton of guys, the third chapter of Flame of Keld is, if a red source you control would deal damage to a permanent or player this turn, it deals that much damage plus 2 to that permanent or player instead. Also, pretty great with Goblin Chain Whirler, just saying.
I mean, it is good with Goblin Chain Whirler, but the thing that's, like, really absurd with this card is that on chapter 3, you can, like, just for 2 or 3 mana, activate a Lavamancer, deal 4, Goblin Grenade, hit him for 7. Like, that's really, really outrageous.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, hey, 5 damage off a bolt is very good.
Yeah, and I mean, it's only playing 2 copies. It's not a card you want a lot of, but when you play this deck, you're going to notice that your hand is empty by turn 3, like, always. It's really unlikely that your hand isn't super empty by turn 3 or 4, so it's really easy to play it and have the first chapter just do nothing. It just says 2 mana, next turn, draw 2 cards, and the turn after, just your opponent's dead. So, right. I like the card. I think it fits in this deck very, very well. Yeah, I mean, this deck's very strong. It's a good deck. It's pretty, pretty streamlined, linear. Just, it has one plan, and that's get you dead right now. And it's good at that. It is very good at that. Yes. I think it's the type of deck that if you want to beat it, you can beat it. But it's also, a very cheap deck. Like, you want to play the fetches, but, like, if you don't have the fetches and you just want to play 18 mountains, You should probably cut the Grim Lavamancers also, but then if you did those things, just replace Grim Lavamancer with some other red one drop, preferably a goblin, you know, it's a super, super, super cheap deck. So, you know, this is...
Well, I mean, you could play, like, you could play four Ramunap Ruins in here in place of, like, a set of the fetches. You could play... Sure. There's a bunch of them that I can't think of right now.
I don't
now
think I would actually play Ramunap Ruins. It's too hard to activate. I mean, you could do it. You could for sure do it. I guess once you stop playing fetches, but Ramunap Ruins and Devastating Summons deck sounds really tough.
Yeah, well, maybe Ramunap Ruins isn't it, but what's the mono red creature land?
Getu Encampment? Is that it?
Hmm.
You could play a Gendry of the Spires. That's a sweet one.
Yeah, Gendry of the Spire. That card's great. Yeah, so like you have options to kind of like do more stuff with your lands. I mean, hell, you can run Shard Volley. Like that's, I don't think that is the worst possible thing you could be doing.
I mean, it's a little like you don't have that many lands. You're an 18 land deck, and once you're playing, you kind of just like have to accept that you're playing Devastating Summons. Like that card is tough. I mean, you like it's kind of an all in thing. It's not you're not like Devastating Summonsing for two. It's like this is like if I don't kill you this turn, I'm going to lose. So I'm just going all in right now, stacking all of my lands, making 2/3/3s, and we'll see what happens. You know, I mean that's just how the deck plays. Like you don't have another option. You're not like you're not being the Jeskai deck that plays a Teferi. That's not the type of deck you are. You just go for it. You know, like sure. Like one Shard Volley is probably fine, but I think I'd probably play the fourth Goblin Grenade first. Maybe I don't know. Maybe that one's not it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's if we're like moving into like different deck territory. Like that's. Yeah. But anyways, if you the almost the entirety of the cost of the deck is the 12 fetch lands, and Legion Loyalist, which is very expensive.
Oh, it's Goblin Guide.
Oh, Goblin Guide too. But I mean, even so, Goblin Guide like used to be like a 40 something dollar card. It's $25. But even so, like the TCG player, we'll use the Card Kingdom one. So like Card Kingdom, $627, of which 100 is Goblin Guides, 50 is Legion Loyalist, and then the rest is like Arid Mesa's $45, Blood Saint Meyer $25, like Wooded Foothills $30, $27 or whatever. So that's it. That's the cost of the deck. So if you either A already have these or B you just like want to do something else, make some other concessions in the land base to sort of get your thin on, then I think you could probably build this deck for $250 pretty easily.
Yeah, I mean, if you just went 18 mountains, this deck is like a $200 deck.
Yeah. And then Infect. So back now many, many weeks, like 3 weeks, I think, ish, it was 2 shows ago, we were talking about Tron, and I was like, man, Infect is going to totally make a comeback. And turns out I was totally right. 1,000% right.
Yeah, you nailed it. Infect is back.
Infect is back, baby. But not the Infect that you're expecting. And this is very, very exciting for me because I love Black-Green Infect. I got the cards for it at Magic Online. I was playing it and just sort of like tinkering with it. Because
Aaron, color me shocked that you would be in for a Golgari deck.
I know, it seems so strange. This is very out of character for me. But like Phyrexian Crusader is one of my favorite cards. Like the card is just great.
The card is messed up right now. With humans so everywhere, with Jeskai being the premier control deck, like it is just unblockable, hexproof, can't die, just double strike. Like this card's messed up.
Yeah. The biggest performers for me, so the sort of standard-ish runs 2 Rancor and like some number of, there was another trample thing besides Become Immense. Or no, I'm sorry, besides, oh, is that it? Just Rancor. So these were running 2 Rancors. I was playing 3, and let me tell you, that card is an overperformer from Jump Street. It is great. For my money, I would play 3. That's just me. We were talking about this before yesterday when we were talking about the show, and it is my firmly held belief that Vines of Vastwood is a very medium to occasionally actively bad card, and the second place winner played 2.
I think that's totally fine. I think Vines is one of the, like, Vines is super, super important in blue-green because it's just a way to protect your creatures. But once you're playing, like, Inquisition and Thoughtseize and Duress in your sideboard, I don't know if they're always playing all of those, but once you have access to that effect, it's a lot easier to protect your creatures, right? Where it's, like, you can kind of see their hand. Maybe they have, like, a Path to Exile or a Lightning Bolt or, like, in Human's case, a Reflector Mage, and then you just take that card and now you don't need the Vines. So, like, right. I think you are right in that Vines is worse in this deck than it is in blue-green, for sure. But the thing is that, like, it's still just a good card. Like, it's still just a modal pump spell that has other utility, whereas, like, a lot of the other cards just kind of do one thing, which is what makes it so good, right?
Sure. Rhinoceros played the Hashep Oasis, which I fully support. I've won games off the back of that card, and it's a very low cost for this deck to play it. The problem is, and one of the reasons that Vines is, like, kind of a hassle to play in this deck, is with 4 Inkmoth Nexus, you are still playing a 3-color deck. So having double green on turn 2 to protect your Glistener Elf is not guaranteed. That didn't make any sense.
That totally makes sense.
Having double green available to, like, if that's your only pump spell.
Well, no, it makes a ton of sense to have double green. Like, you want triple green sometimes. Like, sometimes you definitely, like, there are times where you, like, you know, you don't want to play your Glistener Elf on 1 because it's your only threat and you want to protect it. So it's like you play it on 2 with double green up, or you, like, need to, like, cast your Might of Old Crow some main phase and you need to protect it from a Lightning Bolt or whatever. Yes. So, like, the deck definitely wants double green. You're 100% right about that. I think that the Hashep Oasis over any number of Pendlehavens is interesting. And I think you never see this in blue-green. It never happens because Pendlehaven is generally just better. Except that it only works on 1-1s. And your best card, Phyrexian Crusader, is not a 1-1. So you need a way to pump that sometimes, right?
Right. So what I ended up doing is I actually cut the mana dorks entirely. And, like, I know that that's blasphemy.
I cannot get behind this.
I am not saying that it is right necessarily, but losing the single, like, losing the Exalted trigger in exchange for a third Rancor and Groundswell, which I really like Groundswell. Personally, I was surprised that it didn't make it into these. But I had, like, 2 Become Immense, 2 Phyto Burst, 3 Rancors, and, like, 5 main deck discard spells. And that, to me, felt way better than, like, playing a Mana Dork in that slot. Because playing the turn 2 Phyrexian Crusader versus playing the turn 3 Phyrexian Crusader after tearing your hand apart twice was way better. Like, I would much rather play him on turn 3, and then turn 4, I go, Phyto Burst, Apostle's Blessing, Might of Old Crosa, you're dead. And that's the thing that I know that, like, you and I have gone back and forth about Phyto Burst as, like, being even remotely playable, which I feel it is, and you feel it isn't. But, like, 2 mana for +5/+5 means that you only need 2 spells in a turn and you don't need Exalted or anything like that. Like, it makes the kill self-contained between that and any of the +4/+4 spells with any 1 power creature.
Yeah. I mean, I understand why you're playing it, but I think the card is just too bad. It's like, I just cannot imagine any world where you would play that card over Vines of Vastwood.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's flavor country. So good.
I just think it's just so much worse. It's just not even close.
You lean, obviously, like, you lean on the discard, you lean on Blossoming Defense, but And that's also, that's a playstyle thing too. Obviously, like, I have a tendency to play more discard maybe than other people. And that's certainly a concession to that. But there were just so many times where I felt it was like, where the mana dork play just felt really bad.
I mean, I guess that's fair, but like, if we're talking about a world where red deck wins is super popular, and we're talking about, like, you need to win before Karn and Ulamog come down, and you need to get in there before, you know, they play that KCI and you just die right there, I want my mana dork so I can cast my Phyrexian Crusader on turn two. Just, like, in fact, while it looks like a deck that's just all one mana spells, it's just so mana hungry that you just want to give up one mana on turn one so you can have two mana on three and three mana on four so bad.
I don't know. I think that the game plan of black green just as a shell is so different from blue green that you are racing. You want to finish the game quickly, but like that Karn or that Ulamog or that Ugin, like you can duress that Karn. Like hell, you can duress the expedition map, and then like you've bought yourself two turns. The difference between this deck and other decks that do that is you only need two turns to close the game out. Like you need shields down long enough to stick something and then protect it with a discard spell or, you know.
Look, here's my issue with your strategy right now. And it's not that what you're suggesting is inherently wrong. It's that you're falling into the trap of playing a worse something else. So like, I think that the way you're trying to play Infect is totally reasonable. Like, that's definitely a way that you can play Infect, and it's probably a way that could be very successful. My issue with it is that once you start taking away the mana dorks and you start taking away the acceleration, you become kind of a bad Death Shadow deck. And once you start doing that, I think you should just be a Death Shadow deck. Like, I think what you should do once you are trying to get away from the turbo kill you right now plan that this deck sometimes just has... Like, sometimes you just don't have discard, you don't have fatal pushes, but you, like, you know, you have the Hierarch, you have the you know, the Inkmoth Nexus, and you have them dead on turn three. And that's just,
I mean,
that's just, like, what the deck has sometimes, right? But, like... Sure,
I mean, there's plenty of times where you go, like, Glistener Elf, Rancor, hit you for four, untap, Phyto Burst, kill you.
Sure, and that is something that the deck can do, but the one thing the deck cannot do that you should not ever be doing with Infect is blocking. You don't really want to be on the defense with this deck. Ever generally, unless you have like a Crusader, and even then it's like not really what the deck wants to do. But like once you try to slow the deck down, there's gonna be games you need to block. Like you're on the draw against humans, like they might just have a fast draw, and it's like you don't have any way to speed yourself up, so like you're blocking now. Like that's the spot you put your deck in, and this deck just isn't gonna do that. It doesn't do that at all. And Death Shadow would be able to do that. Death Shadow can play a, you know, one mana 8/8 sometimes. So you know, I don't think that necessarily the way you're playing this deck is a wrong way to play the deck. I just think that once you start going that direction, you should consider playing Shadow instead, if that makes sense.
Sure. I mean, the humans example is a little bit off because Crusader kills everything in their deck just about. Like, Champion of the Parish, Thalia. I mean, well, not Thalia.
Phyrexian Crusader is...
Actually, no, it does. It has protection from white.
It is good against humans, but it's like, what if you don't have the Crusader and you just have a slow draw? Like, you have a, you know, you're playing, what is the Plague Stinger? You have like a turn two Plague Stinger on the draw against humans. Like, you cast Inquisitions, their hand is mono two drops, and, you know, they have...
Yeah, you're probably going to lose.
But that's the thing, is like, maybe if you had the Hierarch, you could, like, play the Plague Stinger, have the protection spell for their... Or be able to, you know, cast another discard spell or whatever and then kill them on turn three. Whereas, like, you wouldn't necessarily be able to do that. I don't know. You also just get to cast the Crusader on turn two as opposed to having to wait till turn three. Where it's, like, discard spells against humans just isn't great, generally. Like, it's kind of good, but, like, they don't really care if their hand gets ripped apart because they're just playing to the board. And all of their stuff is just spells. I don't know. I just think that... This deck needs to be fast. I mean, that's the Infect plan, is just get you dead right now.
Oh, it's like I said, I mean, it's still fast. It's just not like turn two kill fast.
Sure.
So like I said, I'm going to keep tinkering with it. I did not do a ton of like AB testing with mana dorks without, And I'm, as always, I am prepared to be wrong. The person that came in, top eight wasn't like number one, number two. No Oasis, played one Urborg, which I thought was interesting.
I like the Urborg.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fine with the Urborg.
What's your Nexus cast, Phyrexian Crusader?
That's true. And that is certainly like a nod to the fact that like you are playing a three color deck. They were running the five main deck discard spells, and they cut some pump spells.
Well, this one was main decking Thoughtseize. The one that came in second had the Thoughtseize on the board, I think.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, they had Inquisition. The second place one had Inquisition in the main. The eighth place or whatever, 5 through 8, had 4 Thoughtseize and 1 Inquisition. I'd have to see what the ladder looked like, but the rest of the top 16 was Burn, Death Shadow, Dredge, Jeskai Control, 2 Mardu Pyromancer, another Tron, and Blue White Control, which I'm guessing is probably actually Jeskai.
Oh, Blue White.
This is like Blue White with 4 Terminus. But
yeah, it's real slow Blue White. I think
it's fine.
I mean, that's just a deck in Modern now. I think really though, the notable thing is that Death Shadow is starting to come back, and I think Death Shadow really is due for a comeback now. I think Death Shadow is. It had a very hard time with humans. It was never great against humans specifically. And I think it's finally getting to the point where Death Shadow pilots are figuring out how to beat humans. You know, your Snapcaster Bolt plan is actually very good against the humans deck, but it was really easy for humans to just kind of, you know, burn you out with a Mantis Rider, Reflect Mage you enough, and just kind of kill you. And, you know, sometimes you'd be stuck with Stubborn Isles in hand or discard spells that just didn't do anything. And they could just kind of grind you out. They're a little more focused than you were, and it really is a huge advantage, you know, in humans versus Shadow, that humans has 20 life and Shadow has whatever 8 or 10 or whatever it has. So
Shadow is the problem that I have with like Shadow versus humans is Reflector Mage your Gurmag Angler is the saddest thing in the world.
Oh, it's brutal. And you're also the type of deck that like doesn't have that many differently named threats because you're just so all in on Shadow or Gurmag Angler, or if you're like, you know, Traverse, you probably are also in on Tarmogoyf, but like no matter what you do, kind of you're just all in on like 3 threats and you just have like a bunch of copies of those and ways to find those. So it's like, yeah, Reflector Mage is super good against you.
Yeah, and Stubborn Denial is just a blank card, pretty much.
I mean, sometimes you can get that turn 1 Vial, but yeah, you're right.
You know, I mean, so having functionally like 5 blanks.
Well, you'll top deck discard too later that just doesn't do anything. And I mean, sure. You'll draw Street Wraith and you can't cycle that bad boy. And it's, you know, you're probably not casting it. So, yeah, I mean, the matchup is bad, I think, game one. I don't think you really have a good shot. Shadow can just do Shadow things. Sometimes you just put a 12-12 in play and they lose to that. But I think overall it's like a bad game one matchup. But I think that, you know, Ben Friedman, who did very well with it at Vegas, and other Shadow players, you know, at the SCG circuit, kind of, you know, Dylan Donegan, Collins Mullins, those players have kind of just come to this conclusion that, you know, you kind of just want to beat the linear decks game one. That's something Shadow's always been very, very good at, is, you know, beating the Storm and Ad Nauseam and even Tron to some extent. Those type of decks where Stubborn Denial is just backbreaking. And then game two against like these humans or affinity deck, they're just this control deck. They just grace this control and it's working really well for them. I think the deck's primed to come back. And I think, you know, I think this is a really strong consideration for the next, you know, week or two. And, you know, if you're expecting to see a lot of Karklan, Shadow's really good against Karklan. I can tell you that much.
Yeah. I also feel like the metagame is starting to shift more quickly than we have seen it in the past. And I think that the stuff that's coming up in Core 19 that we've seen so far is just going to make that happen a little bit faster for a couple of months. So I'm not saying that people should be like, if you have a deck that you like, I don't think it's time to like change the 60, but you might look at a couple of cards in the main deck, and then like half of your sideboard, I think, is probably going to change.
I mean, half is aggressive, but I do think you're spot on. Core 19 looks like a set that they just printed a bunch of sideboard cards for. I mean, there's a ton of them. In fact, you want to just get into it? I'm going to just hop in.
I would like to get into it, as a matter of fact.
Let's just dive right in.
Smooth ass transition. So the big hits, right? Like the big headline is they're reprinting Scapeshift and they're reprinting Crucible of Worlds in the same set, and it's a core set, and it's Scapeshift with the Magic Online promo art and Crucible of Worlds with the OG Fifth Dawn art. So just right off the rip, like, that's insane value. So God.
Yeah, I mean, really, that definitely makes you want to buy the deck. I agree. Yeah, I mean, they're there. There's not much else to say. It's not like it changes the set that much. It's just like, do you need these cards? Well, you might want to buy some of the set.
Yes. Congratulations. They heard that Scapeshift needed a reprint.
Which it did. It did very badly.
It absolutely did. So we picked out a bunch of cards. Hold on, let me pull it up. Doodly-doo. There are a bunch of cool cards in this set. There are a couple of Planeswalkers that are pretty good. There's the 4-mana Ajani, Adversary of Tyrants, is pretty good.
I think this is the best modern Planeswalker in the set.
So he's 2 white-white for 4 loyalty, +1, put +1/+1 counter on each of up to 2 target creatures, -2 is Unearth, return creature card, converted mana cost 2 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield, and then the -7 is get a bunch of cats. It's the Liliana emblem, almost. You get 3/1/1 cat creature tokens with lifelink every turn.
It's not Liliana, it's the Elspeth, it's just an Elspeth +1, but they have lifelink. Which is, I mean, you're going to win. Like, it, there are scenarios it'd where it's
very
not
difficult.
Like, I mean, it is certainly beatable. Like, they could storm off, but if you got to the emblem in the first place, you're probably going to win. Like,
yes. The new Tezzeret is much better.
Can I just point out one thing with the Johnny real quick?
Sure.
I've been playing a lot of Stoneblade in Legacy, and I am hyped for this card. I think this card is very good in that deck.
Okay.
Bringing back the card Snapcaster Mage in your blue-white deck is awesome, and it's not something people expect from the deck. So the -2 is real nice. So the Tezzeret from this set is called Tezzeret Artifice Master, or Artifice Master. It is 3 blue-blue for a 5 loyalty starting Planeswalker that has a +1 that says create a 1/1 colorless Thopter artifact creature token with flying. So you +1 create a Thopter. Already, like, that's pretty strong. Like, I think you would expect a little more generally from a 5-mana Planeswalker, except that he goes up to 6 loyalty, which is a lot. That's a lot for a 5-mana Planeswalker. So, you know, you go to 6, and you immediately have a 1-1 flyer to help protect it. It has a 0 that says, draw a card. If you control 3 or more artifacts, draw 2 cards instead, which is insane. I mean, that is what is really busted about this card, is like, you can play this on turn 3 or 4 in Affinity and just start zeroing to draw 2 every turn, which is wild. And he's just at 5 loyalty. Like, that's really, really strong. And then -9, it says you get an emblem with, at the beginning of your end step, search your library for a permanent card and put it onto the battlefield. Then shuffle your library. So, yeah, I mean, you're probably going to win if you got to a -9. Again, like, you had to get there. And then it's just so much value that it's like, you're going to win. I don't imagine you ever start -9ing very much, because I kind of think you're just going to 0 to draw 2 a lot in decks that play this. And
yeah, you're just going to draw 2 every turn. Yeah. Well, like, why wouldn't you do that?
Well, you're going to do that, and you should, because that's messed up, and this card is really, really strong. Yeah, I mean, geez. 0 to draw 2 is like Jace the Mind Sculptor status. Like, that, it's like arguably better. I mean, you have to have a lot of artifacts, which is, you know, not necessarily the easiest thing, but it's +1 makes artifacts, and like, making a 1/1 Thopter is already good. Like, a flying Thopter is pretty good. So I don't know. I mean, this might be better than a Johnny. The fact that it costs 1 more makes me, and like, it is very artifact reliant, makes me a little skeptical, but I would not be shocked if this ends up being the better Planeswalker. My gut says a Johnny, but I could see this one being better.
I mean, also, you know, like, 4-mana Karn into this guy.
I mean, people are going to get sick of that in Standard. That is going to be way too strong.
I don't think that's out of the question in Modern.
I don't think it's out of the question. It's close, though, because it's just, like, Affinity kind of wants to be lower to the ground. Like, Karn being at the top of the curve is kind of already enough. And if you're already going up to 5, it's like, well, you could play 7-mana Karn, and then you could play 10-mana Ulamog, you know? So it's close. I think if they, like, ever unban the artifact lands, it would be, you know, way more interesting to play this card. This card with Seed of the Synod is really messed up, but, you know, we're not there right now, so I don't know. We'll see what happens. I tell you what, though, I'm going to play this card in Blue Moon. I think this card's really good in that deck.
Sure. Yeah. And the card's great. Like, I have no complaints. I'm glad it doesn't cost 4. Actually, that would be my...
This card would be way too good at 4. I mean, even when you don't have a ton of artifacts, like, 0 to draw a card isn't the worst case scenario. Like, it's fine because you just stay at 5 loyalty. Like, it almost seems to me like this 0 should have been a -1. Like, I'm kind of shocked it's not. But it isn't, so just keep zeroing, you know. They gotta deal 5 damage to this before it goes away.
All right, moving on. I skipped those. Supreme Phantom is another 2-mana Spirit Lord.
Yeah, Modern Spirit's got a pretty decent upgrade in this set. They got, I think it's a 2-mana 1/3 flying? I think it is flying.
I have to imagine it has flying.
I think it's a 2-mana 1/3 flying that gives all your other spirits +1/+1. So it's just another Spirit Lord, which is something Spirits was missing. Spirits had one very good Lord. The Captain? Drug Skull Captain. That Lord is very good. It's legitimately a very good Lord, and it kind of really didn't anything else. It had good cards. It had a bunch of good cards, but no other good Lords. And this one is very good. Yep.
And then Remorseful Cleric is the other big spirit that they got. It's a 1 and a white, 2/1 flyer, and you can sack it to exile all cards from target player's graveyard.
I mean,
that is an effect that decks are interested in, and having it on a relevant creature type with a somewhat aggressive body. I mean, like, this is just, it's another selfless spirit type thing.
Yeah, I mean, this is a card that is going to see more play than the Spirit Lord because it is more versatile. There's not really a lot of graveyard hate creatures in Modern. You know, there are some, definitely exists. Scavenging Ooze is the first one that comes to mind, obviously, but if you've ever played Jund against Dredge or, you know, Hollow One or whatever, you know that Scavenging Ooze can sometimes be a little slow. It can be a little mana intensive at times, especially when it's, you know, every activation is a green pip, which you can sometimes get in trouble with Blackleaf Cliffs and whatnot. But just having, you know, like a 2-mana 2/1 flyer is totally reasonable in Modern. It's not great. Like, you're not playing just 2-mana 2/1 flyer, but that card by itself is reasonable. It's not embarrassing. And then the fact that it just has this relevant text against some decks that just completely hose, you know, in a format that has, you know, Court of Calling or Collected Company even, and, you know, humans can board this in to give it better graveyard hate than it currently has. And, you know, there are a lot of decks right now in the format that, you know, need their graveyard to go off. I mean, Storm plays the card Pass in Flames, right? Crack Clan doesn't really work without a graveyard. There's Goryeo's Vengeance decks. There's Hollow One decks. I mean, this card's applications are wide. I mean, even against blue-white control or Jeskai control, you know, they might have their Surgecrest Kanta. You know, you play your 2/1, they're like, well, do I bolt it? Because if I bolt it, I'm going to lose my whole graveyard, and my Kanta is going to take a while to flip, you know. Can counter a Snapcaster trigger if they're targeting something that's, like, backbreaking. The card's just very good.
Yep. They also, man, they picked up this other interesting spirit, Departed Deckhand. 1 and a blue for 2/2 Spirit Pirate. It has the illusion text. When it becomes the target of a spell, sacrifice it. It has kind of like a weird version of Shadow. So Departed Deckhand can't be blocked except by spirits. And it has a activated ability, 3 and a blue. Another target creature you control can't be blocked this turn except by spirits. So this is like, there's a Shadow Sliver. Is that actually like almost the same text, except it says gain shadow and the 3 and a blue is casting cost. This is an interesting effect. I don't know that it quite gets there, but interesting. Like, can't be blocked except by creature type, maybe the beginning of a new template. So I would keep an eye out for that, because over time, it's one of those things where, right, like, when you have one of them, it's kind of eh. But if you can only play four of them in a deck, it's kind of eh. Once you can play eight of them, 12 of them, then that turns into something.
I think this card, like, this effect is powerful. I just don't think this is aggressively costed enough for Modern. Like, I'm just not interested in paying four to make something unblockable. That's just too much in Modern.
Sure. I mean, it's, hey, Training Grounds.
I mean, not that's fair. Late. But that's what I'm saying. You're right. You're right, though, to say, like, keep an eye out for this, because it is a powerful effect, and, like, it is something that could happen more and more often. And it's like, once you see this card with, like, you know, two for an activation or one even, then it's like, well, maybe now we're getting somewhere. But, you know, at four, it's like, right. I don't know.
Master Thopterist.
Psy Master Thopterist. It's two and a blue.
Yes. Two and a blue. I was one for a 1/4 classic body, I guess, for a scholar. Whenever you cast an artifact spell, create a 1/1 colorless Thopter artifact creature token with flying. One and a blue, sacrifice two artifacts, draw a card. You put this on the list. I don't think this guy's good enough.
I think this guy's messed up, man. Just like
in
decks that play artifacts. Like,
okay. I mean, like, affinity, your hand is already empty by the time you cast this guy. Blue Tron
would not play this card. This is not a Blue Tron card. This is I'm playing Lantern Control and I have Ensnare. I want an army of 1/1 flyers that can attack you, but I also want a defensive creature that's like, you know, can bridge the gap to my Ensnaring Bridge. Or this is my Karklan Ironworks, like, I'm just going to keep casting this Mox Opal and getting it back and keep casting it, and now I have actual infinite mana because all of my things make 4 mana when a Karklan's in play and I can't lose anymore. Like, I don't know that it's necessarily going to get there, but anytime you see make a token for no mana, it's just a trigger. Like, it's something you need to watch out for, because this is very abusable and it draws cards. So I don't know that.
I mean, like, I guess this could be the, okay, you already play SRAM, you already play Pure Steel Paladin, so you've got a bunch of zero mana artifacts, and in game two, when you are going to get completely hated out because that deck is terrible, you can play this guy, and then all of your bone saws turn into actual creatures, and then you can hopefully win the game from there. Just saying. I sense that you are unconvinced. Yeah. Okie dokie. All right. So my position is that Psy Master Thopterist is not playable. This feels like another Jalira Master Polymorphist to me. It's a card that I wanted to be very good, that is super neat, and it just never went anywhere.
Look, I think you could be right that it isn't playable. Like, it could certainly turn out that this is not a playable Modern card. My thing is, like, the text of zero mana make a 1/1 artifact flying token is really powerful. So, like, it's totally possible that it is very good. So again, I mean, you know, we do these set reviews all the time. Not all the cards we preview end up being Modern playable.
Sure.
We're just trying to, you know, throw out there what, you know, the cards that could be. And this one has a chance, I think.
I guess it's, if the two artifacts that you're sacrificing also draw you a card, like, I guess that's a thing.
I mean, that is a thing. I'm more interested in its combination with Ensnaring Bridge, because Ensnaring Bridge is the type of card that you really want 1/1 flyers with, right? Because you can just, like, have some 1/1 flyers, draw your card, attack, play your card, they can't attack, you just kill them, right? Like,
yep.
It just goes really well with that card, and it also, it just blocks well. I mean, it just makes some chump blockers until you find your bridge, and I don't know. Powerful card. It also, like, that deck plays Whir of Invention now, so having extra artifacts to, you know, kind of convoke is powerful, so.
Okay. All right. That I could get behind.
Okay. All right. But anyway, I don't think the card's, it's not the best Modern card in the set, that's for sure. It just is a role player that could exist.
Yes. Now, the land, this land, I'm actually very excited about. Isolated Tower is one of the rare lands.
Is it Isolated Tower?
That's one of the translations. It was previewed in Russian.
Okay, I was going to say, because the translation I saw was Detection Tower.
Yeah, it's basically, it's a glaring spotlight,
yep.
But on a land. So it taps for colorless, it comes into play untapped, which is something I always look for in a actually playable utility land. And this one has one tap until end of turn. Opponents and creatures with hexproof they control can be the targets of spells and abilities as though they didn't have hexproof. Rip Bogles.
Yeah, this is awesome. This is really, really strong for the decks that want it. Like, it is so nice to be able to have one of your sideboard cards and Jeskai Control be a land for when you just play that control mirror and you just get to bring in a land that just is also very good for spots you want it. Like, oh man, you know, in the Jeskai Control mirror, I know this is pretty niche, but like,
Geist?
Yeah, I was going to say, Geist is like one of the most popular things ever, and it's so frustrating, and it's so hard to deal with, and it's like, you can't really bring in that many answers, because like, what if they don't have it, or what if they didn't even bring it in? But like, if they did bring it in, and you didn't bring in very many answers, you're just dead to it. And it's like, this card's so low cost, it's on a land, it's so nice, and it just like, hoses some decks. Like, how is Boggles ever beating Jeskai if they draw this card? You just, they can't. Like, what are you going to do? Like, Path to Exile, your thing with 18 enchantments on it, you lose, you know?
Right.
Like, yes. Oh my god. But it also just, like, hoses random stuff, like, oh, nice Thrun, or, like, sometimes you play against spirits, which could be popular now, and, you know, what is it, Drogskull Captain gives everything hexproof. This is the type of card that I just have been wanting Wizards to print more of for so long, and they just haven't done it, and now they're finally doing it, and it's awesome. It's like, this card is not too powerful. It's not too good. It's not broken by any means. It's, like, marginally playable at best. But, like, if I want to beat Boggles, I can beat Boggles now. Which is just so nice. Because it's, like, before you couldn't do that.
Yeah, no, I really like this. And I think this is the sort of... They started kind of on this road with Nephalia Academy. And that was the... if a spell or ability an opponent controls causes you to discard a card, you may reveal it and put it on top of your library. And same thing, it's untapped, it's a land, it taps for colorless. Like, these types of utility lands are great. So I'm very glad this is out there. I think it also, like, helps in limited a little bit, because one of the complaints that people have is hexproof creatures in limited are too good. And they're not wrong. And like, the hexproof creatures in this limited format are obnoxious. So this is a strong win all around. Everybody should be happy that this card exists.
No, this is a sweet card, and it's marginal. Like, it's not the type of card that's just going to go in every single modern deck, but it's sweet that it exists. It's a card, you know, you can go fetch it off of Sylvan Scryings or Expedition Map if that's what you're looking for. It's just a cool card. Just happy it's printed, you know?
Yep. Amulet of Safekeeping. They can't stop printing things that are just specifically designed to beat Storm that will completely fail to beat Storm.
Yeah, this card's not going to beat Storm. It's really just not. But the thing is that I don't hate that they're doing this. Like, I like that they're printing colorless answers to, like, really frustrating and powerful mechanics, as opposed to just banning the deck entirely. Like, I think this is a really beneficial way to attack the modern format, where it's like, we're giving modern new cards, as opposed to just like, oh, your Storm deck's too good, we're going to ban Baral, you know? Which, like, nobody really wants. Like, it's really annoying to play against and lose to Baral, right? Like, that's a really frustrating feeling, but nobody wants to, like, people who own, like, Storm decks don't want their deck banned, and people playing against the deck don't want it banned as much as they just want to beat the deck now. Like, it's really frustrating to lose to it, but it's really satisfying at this point to beat the deck, because you know it's good.
Sure.
And, like, having a card that, like, helps you beat it is awesome. Like, it just is, I think, how Magic should be, just how people want to play Magic in today's day and age. And, you know, I don't think this card quite gets there, but I'm happy they're printing it. And I do think it's interesting in the fact that it, like, hoses other decks, like, better than it hoses Storm.
Right. So, Amulet of Safekeeping is a 2-mana artifact. Whenever you become the target of a spell or ability an opponent controls, counter that spell or ability unless the controller pays one, and creature tokens get -1/-0. So it's just like,
you know what deck this card's really actually good against is Mardu Pyromancer. Like, yes, they can blow that discard up, and like, yes, they can take it out of your hand. But like, if you stick this against Mardu Pyromancer, it just like it just slows them down so much and invalidates so much of what their deck is doing. And it's like, yeah, they probably have K Command against you, but like, how many do they have? 2, 3, maybe at most. Like, if you're playing like a deck where they wouldn't have brought in a Braid or Wear Tear or whatever, then like, they probably, you know, don't really have very many ways to answer this, and it's really powerful against them. It just shuts off so much of their deck.
Sure. Well, so here's the other thing. If they ban Bounding Krasis and Pestermite, they can unban Splinter Twin.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's fine.
And then every nerd in the world that wants Splinter Twin unbanned can shut up about it.
I mean, Saheeli's in Modern, and this card beats that, right? It's also, like, it's not the worst against Burn. Like, it's not great. Like, I wouldn't say, like, snap, bring this in, I'm just going to beat Burn every time, but it's not the worst against Burn. Like, it makes them a lot slower.
Yeah, well, it... So, like, the Burn hate, the enchantment artifact based Burn hate is basically just, like, you're giving them a free shock because they're just going to bring in Smash Smithereens or Destructive Revelry.
I mean, maybe, like...
But they have to have it. One,
they have to have it, and two, it's like, are they 100% bringing it in? Like, should you even bring this card in against them? Like, maybe, like, you know, it's like, maybe you're playing I'm looking at this from Jeskai, or even, like, Mardu, it's like, maybe you're playing Mardu, and it's like, well, they're, like, expecting Lightning Helix, so they have, like, all Skullcracks and stuff, and it's like, if this is your hate against them, like, Skullcrack doesn't do anything against this card, but this card slows them down a lot. Like, they have to draw 3 lands for their deck to even work against this card, essentially. It's like, mm-hmm. Their Goblin Guides attack for 1. Their Swiss Spheres might not even attack. Like,
well, no, it's just tokens get -1.
Oh, it's just so tokens?
Yeah.
Oh.
Creature tokens get -1.
Okay,
yeah,
if it was
creatures, then this would be a very,
okay,
very
it's not
card.
It's not actually that great against Burn. But it, like, it's not the worst. Like, they still have to point a bunch of spells at you, and they still have to draw, like, they have to draw 3 lands before they can cast Boros Charm at you, so that's a thing.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, the tax is very real. You know, I don't know if people
is
were
it spell
bringing...
or ability.
Yeah, it's spell or ability.
So like, it kind of does something against Lantern. Like, every time they point the Mill Rock at you, they have to pay 1. Like, yep. that's not zero. Like, that is a thing.
That's a real cost. All right, Desecrated Tomb. I like this. I think it has interesting fair play applications, and then also in Dredge and other sort of like graveyardy kind of decks has the potential to be just like give them something that they were lacking, which is like defense.
Dude, this card is degenerate with the card Bloodghast and the card Prized Amalgam. I'm actually like dreading this card being Modern, to be quite honest. It's so dumb that like the creature doesn't have to be exiled. It doesn't have to like, it just has to leave the graveyard. Like, you can just like have this in play and like trigger Bloodghast and trigger Narcomoeba and trigger Prized Amalgam, and then you just get a bunch of extra 1/1 flyers, and now you're bringing back your Scourge Devils, and they're all 3/1s, and you're just dead, you know?
Yeah, Scourge Devil, that's a good card. So Desecrated Tomb is a 3-mana artifact, and whenever one or more creature cards, only creature cards, leaves your graveyard, create a 1/1 black bat creature token with flying. I like this card a lot. I think this is an actual good tool for Dredge.
It's sweet for Dredge. It's good with Delve just in general. Like,
sure. Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of sort of like incidental things that it also helps.
It's the ultimate answer to scavenging use. It's like, please, please eat my graveyard.
Sure. I mean, I think you still end up losing to the scavenger use.
Yeah, I don't think that one's actually very good. But it is kind of funny. It's kind of funny.
Unbalanced, but it's right. But once again, it's not nothing, right? Like, it adds you get a little more grind, more chump blockers. But yeah, this is just a neat card. This feels like a core set card to me. and that is good, because I actually really like core sets in like I really liked Origins, and I felt like a lot of the cards in Origins felt like Corset cards, and I felt like they'd really kind of figured it out, and then they were like, all right, we're not going to do this anymore. And I was like, no, you just figured it out.
Yeah, no, for real. This set is awesome. I'm really happy they printed it. It's a really cool set. It's really powerful. There's a lot of interesting and like useful cards. I think this is a really good set.
Yeah. Isolate is a single white mana for an instant. Exile target permanent with converted mana cost 1.
Yep. And this is the first in like a cycle of single mana, like, I guess, instant sorcery enchantment. There's like a single mana cycle of, they look kind of like sideboard slash possibly main deck cards for modern, just in general. And I guess Eternal formats more, but you know, they could see play in standard. But they look geared towards modern mostly. And I think Isolate is the best of them so far, in my opinion. And Isolate, yes, in the red one, but we'll talk about the red one later. But
yeah, so I think Isolate is the one that is most broadly applicable. Like the other ones are just they're a lot more narrow. So the white one is Isolate, exile target permanent, converted mana cost 1. The black one is 1 mana instant exile target colorless creature. You gain life equal to its power. Obviously, like,
that one's just strictly sideboard, but it's really powerful there, right?
Yeah, it's sideboard, but like Jund versus Eldrazi Tron now is actually winnable.
Yeah, I mean, nice Wurmcoil engine, right?
Nice Ulamog.
Oh my god, gain 10.
Yeah, gain 10. Mistcaller is a 1 mana merfolk wizard that you can sack to like Containment Priest, basically, until end of turn. If a non-token creature would enter the... Oh, interesting. I didn't see the non-token clause originally, so it's worse. Until end of turn, if a non-token creature would enter the battlefield and it wasn't cast, exile it instead. So that's like anti-dredge, like Aether Vial,
anti-collected company, anti-reanimator, like there's a lot. Through the breach. There's a lot of spots where this is powerful. But
fringe.
I mean, the nice thing about it is it's a 1-mana 1/1 with a relevant tribe. In fact, 2 relevant tribes. It's a merfolk wizard, so it's really easy to just play this in merfolk and just like hate out decks randomly, right? Like, oh, they cast a company, all right, get you, you know, like I don't know. I'm happy they printed cards like this, but back to Isolate. I'm very interested in Isolate. I think blue white control specifically is I think a deck that's very close to being very good, but it's kind of embarrassing against decks like Humans and decks where you need cheap spot removal. And we kind of had a back and forth on Twitter, I want to say about 3 weeks ago, where we talked about Mental Misstep. And I believe you were saying that Mental Misstep is a travesty of a card and it should never be unbanned. And
yes, strong agree.
I don't think that you're wrong necessarily. I think the card is pretty dumb. But my argument was that despite it being a dumb card that probably shouldn't have been printed, it does do something interesting in the modern format specifically, which is punish people for playing all 1-mana spells, which they're just... Besides Chalice of the Void, there just wasn't a way to do that. That just didn't happen in the format. So, like, you saw decks all over the place just play a bunch of 1-mana spells. It was just the best thing to do, right? When you see that out of Infect, you see that out of Death Shadow, and, you know, Humans is kind of centered around 2, but they also just still have a lot of 1-mana spells. And it's like, you know, something that blue-white decks specifically, for a very long time, have had a very, very, very big problem with, are cards like Aether Vial and Noble Hierarch and Birds of Paradise. Cards that accelerate your opponent so that they can get under you, and then they just beat you. They just get way too far ahead. You know, they have a counterspell for your Wrath, or they Thought Seize your Wrath, and then you just lose. Because you can't keep up tempo-wise because your curve is too much higher than theirs. And this is so nice in that it also answers Aether Vial. There's no other card that does that in this format that I can think of, right?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Like, this is legitimately a good hate card against Humans. Like, it kills the Champion of the Parish, which is a huge problem for a lot of decks because it just gets so big so quick. It kills Hierarch to slow the deck down. It exiles Aether Vial. You know, it exiles Death Shadows, which can be a really big problem. It's, you know, recastable with Snapcaster Mage. There are a ton of permanents that cost one. Amulet of Vigor is a really, really problematic one drop for some of these blue-white decks. You know, Tribe Scout in the same deck. And it's like, if you look at decks that are playing ones, they're generally playing a lot of ones. So this is... I would not be shocked if we look back in, like, you know, a year and think that this was the defining card of the set. Like, this was the fatal push, if you will.
Maybe.
I mean, it's definitely no... It's definitely not fatal push. I think fatal push is a better card. But, you know, if we look back and...
It certainly... It gives them board interaction, like, tempo neutral board interaction against early threats.
Well, it's just like blue white forever. It's only one mana removal spell was Path to Exile. And it's like, you just can't Path to Exile Birds of Paradise. Like, you just don't get anywhere, right? Like, it just doesn't do anything. Like, I'm going to kill your mana guy and give you a land, right? Like,
yeah, it's sad.
It doesn't do anything. And this is actually like a one mana spell that isn't embarrassing because it's just like good against other decks. Like, you know, you probably don't want to use this on, you know, Affinity Springleaf Drum, but you will if you need to, and that's, like, the beauty of the card, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think this card's really powerful. Just, I don't know. It could be bad. It could be a little too narrow, but, like I said, I wouldn't be shocked if we look back in 2 years and think this is the best card in the set.
All right. There is another one drop that I wanted to talk about quickly, just as we're looking at it. Leonin Vanguard. One mana, 1/1. At the beginning of combat on your turn, if you control three or more creatures, Leonin Vanguard gets +1/+1 until end of turn. You gain one life. It's, I have dubbed it. I'm making it happen. It is the mild Nacatl.
Okay.
But I, all seriousness, I would play this in Naya aggro personally.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I could see it. I think, it's more of like a standard plant for cats, but, no joke, I have a very, like, a player I know at my local store when I, like, play my Tuesday Night Moderns, who I know to be a very, very good control player, blue mage type player, showed up one day with cats. He was just playing modern cats. And it was just the Nacatls and this, whatever the 3-mana 2/2 is from Amon Cat, I think. Or Station.
That, yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
Pride Sovereign, that's a card. And he had Regal Caracal and, like, Kasali Pride Mage. And, like, a bunch of really bad other cards. But the deck was legit. I was shocked. It was really good. Oh, Loam Lion. It had Loam Lions.
Ugh.
The deck was surprisingly very good.
Sure. I mean, it's just one drop zoo.
Yeah, it was just a zoo deck, basically. It was a Nacatl deck. But it was surprisingly good. And, you know, this could go in that deck. It could go. It could fit.
There is actually a good cat in this set, which is Leonin War Leader. 2 white-white for 4/4 whenever it attacks. 2 1/1 white cat creature tokens with lifelink tapped and attacking. So this is like Hero of Bladehold, Brimaz, like that.
For the kitties?
For the kitties. But the fact that they have lifelink is...
It's really strong. Good. Yeah, this is a really good card. Hero of Bladehold is a card that won Approach War. Like, it was, yes. It was really good. It wasn't very good against Jace, but when Jace got banned, Hero of Bladehold was really, really good. And
yes,
this is comparable. It's not very good against Chandra or Glorybringer, but, you know, once those cards are going away. It'll be good then. It doesn't die to Lightning Bolt. That's a big deal.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's the thing. Like, I love Brimaz a lot. I think.
As you should. Probably... Brimaz is sweet. He's a regal king, dude.
He is very regal and a very, very kingly. Elvish Clan Caller, not much to say here.
Elf Lord, 2 mana.
2 mana Elf Lord. Green. Yeah, a little bit of devotion.
Yeah, if you look at the Elf decks, the real thing here is that Elf decks in Modern, all their Lords cost 3 before this. Like, yeah. Every single one. So that's a 2 mana Elf Lord. It's basically all its text, but that's relevant in tribal decks.
Yeah, I mean, it has a 6 mana... 6 mana activated ability to get another one and put it on the battlefield, but I'd be very surprised if that ever gets activated.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. Like, it probably won't get activated, but, like, if there's ever a tribe that would activate it, it's elves, right? Like, you just have all this mana because all your things make mana.
Alpine Moon.
This is a big deal, dude.
Okay, so here's Alpine Moon, right? It's a 1 mana, 1 red for an enchantment. As Alpine Moon enters the battlefield, choose a non-basic land card name. Lands your opponents control with the chosen card name, lose all land types and abilities, and they gain, tap, add one mana of any color.
It's just colorless, right? Or is it one mana of any color?
It's any color.
Really? I thought it was just colorless mana.
Yes, that is why people will play this against Tron, and then they will get it Nature's Claimed, and they will lose the game. I think this is a trap. I think that it is not good against the decks that people think it will be good against. So I think this is good against Ink Moth Nexus. I think it's good in red green Tron naming Field of Ruin. Other than like buying you a turn or two, I don't think this really gets there against Tron.
I think this is great against Tron. I'm very, very happy this card got printed. So like, yes, they now have colored mana to cast their Nature's Claim, but like, they probably had colored mana anyway, right? Like, they probably had a Bauble or a Forest or, like, one of these things they could have cast. And, like, you can name the one that's not on the battlefield. Like, that's a thing. Like, you can have, like, you know, you can have Tower Mine in play. And, like, you know, you can go Tower Expedition Map Go. And then you can go Mine Go. I can play Alpine Moon and name Power Plant. And it's like, well, now you have to play your Power Plant and kill it. And then you might have tried next turn, you know? Like, a real thing against the deck. And the thing is that it only costs one mana. Like, it's so easy to just, like, cast this and not, like, the problem with cards like Stony Silence and Blood Moon against Tron is that you're taking off a very real turn in the game and not advancing your board that turn. And, like, they aren't slowed down really that turn. Like, yeah, they don't get seven mana, but they still get three, and they're still gonna, you know, cycle their baubles, and they're gonna find whatever. So, I think it's decent against Tron, but I don't think it's, like, I don't think Tron's its best application, right? Like, I am more interested in this card naming Valakut. Like, turning off Valakut is a huge deal.
Yes, I'm in for that.
But also, like, another really big thing that this does is it turns off only opponents' lands. So, like, it turns off lands that you're both playing in, like, a mirror match, whereas, like, a card with Pithing Needle would not do that, right? Like, in the Tron mirror, you can play this and name Urza's Tower, and, like, you can have Tron and your opponent cannot. Which is a really big deal. But also, like, in a Valakut mirror, you can name their Valakut, right? And it's, like,
yes.
It's really powerful. But, like, in Jeskai mirrors, like, I can name Azcanta the Sunken Ruin with my Alpine Moon, and, like, all of a sudden I have an Azcanta and my opponent doesn't, right? Or, like, I can name Celestial Colonnade. Like, it's really powerful, and the fact that it costs one mana makes it so, so easy to put in your sideboard. So, I think this is going to be the type of card where, you know, it doesn't seem like it's super expensive out of the gate. It's probably not going to end up being that expensive, but, you know, you look at Modern 2 years from now, and it's like, well, hey, there's, like, you know, a lot of red decks have, like, one or two of these in the sideboard. And it's just, like, you know, one of the top 30 most sideboard or most played sideboard cards in Modern or something. So,
I want to believe. I feel like it's not, I don't think it's extreme enough. Like, the fact that it gives them any color of mana, so, like, they don't have to look for their forest to Nature's Claim it. They can just Nature's Claim it.
Sure. I mean, that is definitely a real cost. I thought it gave colorless. I thought the card was, like, amazing. Any color is definitely worse, but I still think the card is quite good. Like, just a one mana answer to problematic lands is very, very nice.
Oh, I mean, I think having it, even in just, like, Jund, like, naming Field of Ruin, I think that's a real thing. Yeah. Because they are routinely getting punished for, you know, if they choose not to play the basic mountain, like, they can get really, really screwed by, like, Field of Ruin. So I'm in on this, but not in the way that people probably think in the immediate thing. Cause they don't have a lot of decks like that. Don't have a great way. Cause, like, Pithing Needle is kind of weird. Sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's kind of eh. I like this. Sun Cleanser. This card seems terrible to me, and I do not know why people are so up in arms about it. So explain it to me.
Well, all right. Well, let's start by reading it, because it's not a very straightforward card.
A lot of text on this card.
Yeah. So, Sun Cleanser is a 2-mana 1/4, and it says when Sun Cleanser enters the battlefield, choose one. Your options are either remove all counters from target creature, it can't have counters put on it for as long as Sun Cleanser remains on the battlefield, or target opponent loses all counters. That player can't get counters for as long as Sun Cleanser remains on the battlefield. So, the other thing is it's a human cleric. So, first of all, it's a human, which means that the human's deck is automatically going to look at it, right?
Sure.
And the big deal is that it is good against Infect in the sense that it's a 1/4, and it, like, can make one of your things block their creature and never take negative counters. So, like, it essentially just can't take damage from it. It's not great against Infect, in the sense that they can still just infect you. Like, you can't target yourself.
Right.
But
and also, not for nothing, but Phyrexian Crusader has protection from white, so can't block it anyways.
Well, sure, but, like, you could block with your Kitesail Freebooter, and then your Kitesail Freebooter can't get Infect counters for as long as it's on the battlefield, so you can just keep blocking with Kitesail Freebooter.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't die, so you just have, like, a blocker that they can't ever get through, which is really annoying for them.
Sure. I mean, it says trample. Oh. It's fine. Everything's fine. It is not a complete zero consideration for me, but it would be very low on my list.
Yeah, I mean, the card's probably not high impact enough, but, like, it's the type of thing where it's like, this is a very unique line of text. Target opponent loses all counters. It's mm-hmm. like, there isn't really a strategy in Modern right now where your opponent gets counters, right? Like, yet. But that is, like, that's not to say that that's, like, untouched design space. Like, energy existed, and that's, like, that is a strategy that could be a Modern thing, right? Like, it isn't yet, but it could be. And if that space is picked up, like, boom, we have a hate card, right? Like,
sure.
This exists in Modern, and it's, you know, something that humans could play. So, again, worth looking at. It's not, again, I mean, it's not, like, snap include, but it is a real card.
All right, what is next? Oh, man, I am so into this card.
No, it's an S instead of a Z.
Okay. Issareth the Awakener, 1BB, human wizard, shocking. Death Touch, great. Putting Death Touch on anything automatically makes it more useful. Whenever Issareth the Awakener attacks...
Except Grave Titan, for the record.
Okay, sure. But that's just flavor. just a little bit of flavor on the top. Whenever Issareth the Awakener attacks, you may pay X. When you do, return target creature card with converted mana cost X from your graveyard to the battlefield with a corpse counter on it. If that creature would leave the battlefield, exile it instead of putting it anywhere else. So, here's where I want to play this card. Mono Black Devotion.
Okay. I was looking more at the creature type human and thinking that there's a good humans deck in Modern, but...
Yes. Well, I think in a world where you're playing Dark Confidant in humans, which you should probably be doing anyways.
I don't know about that.
I think it's great.
I think you can definitely play it. I don't think you, like, necessarily should be playing it, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Like, the humans deck is so deep that it's like it has all these cards that, like, should go in it, and it's just like I don't have room for these. Like, can I fit a Tireless Tracker in here? No. Oh man, I wanted to play Tracker.
Oh, Tracker's terrible in that deck.
It's not great, but the card itself is so good, and it just doesn't fit. You know what I'm saying? It's like, there's all these really, really good humans, and it's like, you can't play all of them, even though you want to.
So yeah, this like, ridiculous rise in returning stuff to the battlefield is here to stay, apparently. Yeah, I mean, it's just, like, unearth.
Look, I talked to Dylan Hand on Twitter, who's, a noted humans player on the SCG circuit. I think he's top 8 at like 3 or 4 events with the humans deck. And he says that this is a real consideration for the deck. And I can see that. I think, you know, it's a card that's really awesome to bring back is Phantasmal Image. And that's a card that dies really easily and goes to your graveyard.
Sure.
It only costs 2 to bring back. And then you just get another ETB trigger with it. And also, like, Thalia's Lieutenant, like, it's a really good card to, like, you know, play, put a bunch of counters, swing with your team, chump block with it. You know, Violent Issareth on a turn, untap, attack with Issareth, pay 2, bring back Thalia's Lieutenant, you know, in combat, boom, all your creatures got bigger again. So it's like, I think this is interesting in the humans deck for sure. You know, I don't know that it's a snap include, but it's definitely the type of card where it's like, you know, we need to try this. We need to put it in the deck for, you know, like a league on Modo and see if it works or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like I said, my mind goes to the jank. Sure. But I think anything that can generate,
you know, even a like, sweet card to bring back is Death Shadow.
Yeah, you can argue that, like Orzhov Charm, though. I don't think you need to go into a, yeah, a whole maybe, other
maybe you
creature.
Want a Death Touch. I don't know. Maybe you want a 3/3 Death Touch.
I mean, here's the thing. I love Death Touch. I think it is a great add on to a creature that gives it utility at sort of all phases of the game. So
except Grave Titan.
But that said, the ability is good. I mean, Unearth is insane, right? Like that's basically what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So, speaking of things that are good in graveyard based decks, Stitcher's Supplier, single black for a 1/1 zombie. When Stitcher's Supplier enters the battlefield or dies, put the top 3 cards of your library into your graveyard. This card is bonkers.
I don't know if I would go that far. I think it's just like a role player.
It goes in dredge in the sense that you can, like, this takes the place of like a Shriekhorn.
Or like an Insolent Neonate. Like, it could be better than that. Maybe, maybe not.
I don't think it's better than Neonate because it doesn't, the draw off of Neonate allows you to dredge, and this just sets that up. In Legacy Dredge, I think this card is nuts because you can play this on turn one, and or you can play this and then flashback Cabal Therapy with it.
Yeah.
And just like dump 6 in the, like, that's nuts. Like on rate for a 1/1, I think this card is, or for a 1 mana thing, I think it's great.
We just haven't seen this ability on a 1 drop. Like, this ability is generally on 2 drop creatures. So the fact that it's so cheap is interesting and noteworthy.
Well, I mean, it's Thought Scour, right? Like, Thought Scour does this for 1 mana with upside. Yeah, and this has
Thought
upside.
Thought Scour is blue, right? Like, sure. This is a black, like, black does not have this effect.
They have printed it on, or similar effects, but like not at 1 mana. Like always at like 3.
Exactly. It's like on 2 mana generally.
Well, I'm thinking of like Necromancer's Assistant or whatever it was from the last like M15.
Sure.
But anyway, so that card is very neat. It is a neat role player in a bunch of graveyard based decks. Militia Bugler. I have no idea why you put this on there. Explain it to me. Explain the Bugler to me.
Okay, so Militia Bugler is 2 and a white for a 2/3 with creature type human, and then it has other text on it. So you can put it in the humans deck.
Okay.
I'm
with you. I'm here.
And then essentially it's a body that replaces itself. It's a 3-mana 2/3 that looks at the top 4 cards of your library, and then you can put a creature with power 2 or less on them into your hand, which, as it turns out, is sweet with Phantasmal Image, because you can just like start chaining 2/3s, and then they all get counters on them with Thalia's Lieutenant. So, and it also finds Thalia's Lieutenant, which is nice. It finds Reflector Mages if you need a thing. Like, it's just a way to make the deck more consistent on a relevant body. So, again, like, it may not be super powerful, but like, the card Elvish Visionary is a card that doesn't look that good, and is like one of the best cards in the Legacy Elves deck. So you never know.
Wait, is he a soldier? Oh, he's a soldier.
Yeah.
Oh, soldier stompy.
Yep. Nope. I mean,
get him.
I think this card could be, you know, a very good card. Like, I would not be shocked if humans actually plays this card. The fact that it just like makes the deck more consistent. Like,
sure. And sometimes you just need to draw a bunch of cards. I wish there was a 2-drop human that would let you draw a bunch of cards. Maybe they'll print one someday.
The problem with Dark Confidant, though, is that it doesn't draw cards right now. It draws cards later, which is, like, humans is all about right now. It's like, I want my stuff, and I want it now. I want to draw my cards now. I want to bounce your creature now. I want to put counters on my creatures right now. I want to kill you right now. Like, that's just how the deck plays, and when you play against it, it feels like that, because everything is happening really quick, and they're tapping Aether Vial, and all your stuff's in your hand, and they have a bunch of, like, 6/6 humans, and you're dead. And
I would agree with that, yes.
Yeah, I don't know. The fact that, like, humans also is the type of deck where it's, like, all of the humans kind of feel really different, and that card hits all of them except Mantis Rider. Like, they all do, like, really different things, right? Where, like, Meddling Mage kind of just, like, stops them from casting something. Kite Self Freebooter's Disruption. You know, maybe you need Ramp. You got your Hierarch. I don't know. That one seems a little less likely, but it is a thing. You know, you need to copy something that's already on the battlefield. And also, Human's just the type of deck where it's, like, if it could play, I don't know, 10 Thalia's Lieutenants, it probably would. Like, it's already playing... Sure, it's already playing Phantasmal Image just to be another Thalia's Lieutenant, because it just, like, isn't very many... two mana humans lords, and it just wants all of them, right? So the fact that it finds Thalia's Lieutenant is a huge tick in the right direction for the card.
Indeed. So speaking of tribes, Elvish Rejuvenator, two and a green for an elf druid. When Elvish Rejuvenator enters the battlefield, look at the top five cards of your library. You may put a land card from among them onto the battlefield tapped. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. So two things are interesting about this to me. One is five cards is Ancient Stirrings Deep, which we've already established is too good, borderline too good. I mean, if this costs one mana, then obviously it'd be a different discussion, but five cards is a significant amount.
Well, five cards is also enough that it's like very, very unlikely that this card misses. Like if you're playing it in a deck that has enough lands, right? Where it's, yes, like, if you're playing this in, like, a 14-land deck, like, yeah, it could miss. But, like, if you're playing this in, like, Valakut that plays, like, 26 lands, you know, like, you're not going to miss. You're going to hit something. Right.
So the immediate thing that I thought of is, do you play this in Valakut over Wood Elves? And I think the answer is maybe. So Wood Elves... is the same mana cost, but it's a 2/2, and you get a forest. No,
what else is a 1/1?
Is it?
Yeah, they're both 1/1s.
Oh, woof. Ain't that about to be. Okay. So, this has no stat. I thought it was, Wood Elves was 2/2 for some reason. So, the good thing about Wood Elves is it always gets a mountain, like in Valakut, right?
Yep.
Because it's not a basic forest, it's any forest card. This, you don't get to search for it, but it can be anything. So, like, it could be another Valakut, it could be... I mean, it's probably going to be a mountain, just based on percentages.
Yeah, I mean, the deck only plays, like, six non-mountain lands, I think. I mean, it plays fetch lands, which aren't technically mountains, but are, like, pretty much mountains, right? So, like... it's pretty likely to hit a mountain, although it's not always a mountain. Like, once you count the fact that there's, like, six to seven non-mountains in, you know, a Valakut deck, then your numbers get a lot lower. Like, once you have, like, 18 mountain hits, like, you're still a pretty big favorite to see a mountain in your top five, but you're not, like, 100% guaranteed, right?
Sure.
But at the same time, like, the fact that you can hit a Valakut when... you know, there are definitely times where the deck has a lot of mountains and all it wants is a Valakut because it just, like, it's having trouble resolving Escape Shift or a Prime Time. It just, like, can't find a Valakut to actually start ending the game. So, you know, maybe this is perfect in that scenario.
So, keep an eye out. I don't know if it's, like I said, or hey, you know what? Maybe that's our spec pick. Just buy a bunch of foil Elvish Rejuvenators and retire on them someday.
Well, also... Scapeshift has, like, recently started to play Bloodbraid Elf, and, you know, this is a hit off Bloodbraid Elf. It's not terrible.
There you go. Pretty good. Fountain of Renewal. One mana artifact. Beginning of your upkeep, you gain one life. Just not terrible. And you can sack it. Three mana, sack Fountain of Renewal, draw a card. I like it. I don't know where I would play it.
Well, I mean, to me, this is just... in decks that have trouble gaining life, that want to gain life because Burn is a deck.
Sure.
You can put this in your deck and not feel too bad about it because it just, you know, cycles worst case scenario. It kind of has the Relic of Progenitus thing going on for it.
Sure.
You know, maybe a deck like Tron wants an early play that can gain them some life until they can start getting to their Wyrmcoil engine. Or, you know, maybe a deck like I've been playing some Blue Moon recently and there's not really very many good ways to gain life in the colors blue and red. You know.
Sure.
This is not a great card, but it does a novel thing at, you know, a very, very cheap mana cost that also cycles, so worth mentioning.
Yes. Dryad Greenseeker. It's one of the ones that you brought up. It's a 2-mana 1/3 dryad, and it has tap, look at the top card of your library. If it's a land card, you may reveal it and put it into your hand. This feels like, I think there was another card called Greenseeker. Yes. From Time Spiral. Green tap, discard a card, search your library for a basic land card, reveal it, put it in your hand. Oh, I see. Okay. So here's the thing. They don't want players to be shuffling their libraries all the time because it's very off-putting for new players. And I totally, like, I buy that as an argument. So this is a very good solution.
Yeah, I don't think there's a solution to that card. I think that card sucks and this card's really good. Like,
I mean, of sort of like smoothing out your draws, getting, you know, having card, I guess this is kind of card draw.
All right, like, look, card. Let me show you the real card that this compares to. You ever heard of the card Sigiled Starfish?
Yes, I drafted Theros. I'm very, very, very familiar with Sigiled Starfish. Also a legal card in Modern, by the way.
No, very legal. That card is very medium. But you know what it needs? Is a point of power. It needs a point of power. It would be Modern playable.
That is a bold statement.
No, for real, I'm kidding about that. But Sigiled Starfish is a really powerful card. It looks really bad. It doesn't look like a really good... It doesn't look like even remotely playable. But the thing is that when you play with it, it just plays a lot better than it looks. And, like, 2-mana on a 1/3 that draws cards is good. And green doesn't have really very many cards like that. It kind of, like, has Tireless Tracker, and it, like, kind of has Courser of Kruphix. But, like, you don't really want, like... Three drops to, like, start hitting your lands is kind of awkward in Modern because you kind of want your lands to come on, you know, turn one or whatever. And the fact that it, like, this card would be a lot worse without fetch lands, but the fact that it's, like, tap scry is awesome. And, like, if it's a land, you just draw it. It's so good. I don't know.
I think. I mean, I believe you. I'm not poo-pooing this as a card. I think it is an interesting effect that I am ready to explore.
Well, the other thing too is, like, you don't show it to your opponent unless you're drawing it, right? So it's like you just kind of get to look at the top card. Like, you, like, Courser is really good because you just get to know your top card and you get to, like, fetch it away or whatever, but this just ends up being really strong.
Plague Mare, bad horse. He rides across the nation, the thoroughbred of sin. No,
I don't know what you're referring to.
All right, Dr. Horrible. Anyway, so Plague Mare is a nightmare horse. It is one black for a 2/2. Can't be blocked by white creatures. When Plague Mare enters the battlefield, creatures your opponents control get -1/-1 until end of turn. I like it. I like this card against tokens, obviously. The can't be blocked by white creatures, I really like.
That's good against humans. Again, like, all of their humans, creatures are white.
Yeah, humans, hate bears. Like, I love this card against, like, any Thalia deck. This is great against. You know, like, I could see this theoretically. I guess I can't really make the statement that it's conceivably Legacy playable in against Thalia decks, but
is better in Legacy than it is in Modern.
Very possible.
And the fact that it kills True Near Nemesis is alone reason to play it, but...
Yeah, that card.
For our purposes, that is a really dumb magic card. But yeah, for our purposes, this is a repeatable Wrath effect with cards like Kolaghan's Command or Izzareth, the thing we previewed earlier.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, people have played Orzhov Pontiff, and it's been really good. There are a lot of decks where -1/-1 to just their side of the field is really, really powerful. Affinity is one that immediately comes to mind. Mardu Pyromancer is another. Sure. And these are real decks. I mean, this card is really good against them. So I don't know. It might not necessarily, you know, just be like a snap include in any black deck in Modern, but it has a unique line of text, and the body it leaves behind after the text is not irrelevant. So
yep, I like it. What else? Oh, okay. This is actually probably one of my favorite cards in the set.
Yeah, I kind of dismissed this when we were looking over, and you were like, no. We got to talk about this one. And then I read it again and I was like, yeah, you're right. We got to talk about this one. This one's really good.
Yes. So Runic Armasaur is one green for a 2/5. That's a chunky monkey. Like,
that's a big boy.
That's a lot of trunk space for a 3-mana creature.
Oh yeah, he's a little fatty, but in a good way.
Yes, and whenever an opponent activates an ability of a creature or land that isn't a mana ability, you may draw a card. So fetch lands seems good. Just fetch lands. Even if it was just lands, I would still consider playing this card. Steel Overseer, Arcbound Ravager, Grim Lavamancer.
Is it Staticaster?
Huh? Is it Staticaster?
That's a good one.
Sure. So there's just, and then yeah, every land.
I mean, it's the lands that's interesting, right? Like, there's some messed up lands in Modern. Modern's a really big format with a lot of really powerful lands. Sometimes your opponents try to ghost core to you. And sometimes your opponents are Todd Stevens, and they have Knight of the Reliquary. And
sure,
they're trying to get ghost quarters with Knight of the Reliquary, and they're trying to activate that on you a bunch. And meanwhile, you're just drawing all of the cards.
Yep. So this is easily one of the cards that I'm the most excited about.
And did you, by the way, did we mention that it's a 2/5?
It's a 2/5.
Dude, look at the size of this lad, man.
I know.
Absolute unit.
Absolute unit. Yes, that is correct. I mean, it's bigger than a Courser of Kruphix for the same mana cost. It's a dinosaur, so you got all that dinosaur synergy. But I really like this. But I also like dumb green creatures.
Hey, Aaron, have you heard of the card Doran the Siege Tower?
I have heard of Doran the Siege Tower. I feel like we can do way better than this card for Doran, though. I mean, if we're going down that route, then like we're going Lagana Band Trailblazer into Nyx Fleece Ram into Doran Swing 9. Like, that's
sure. I mean, yeah, you can do those things, but I'm just telling you, this guy's an absolute unit.
then there's Elder Dragons, many of which are ridiculously overcosted, clearly created for Commander, and that's totally fine. It can have all the toys they want. There's a single flip card in this entire set.
Even Standard. Some of them are like costed for Standard, but they are just not meant for Modern. But yeah, let's talk about this flip card.
All right, so Nicol Bolas, the Ravager. He is one blue-black-red, as you would imagine, for a 4/4 flyer. When it enters the battlefield, each opponent discards a card, and then he has 4 blue, black, red, exile, Nicol Bolas, blah, 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 flip him, and he becomes the ridiculous 7 loyalty planeswalker who is +2, draw 2 cards, -3, deal 10 damage to target creature or planeswalker, -4, put target creature or planeswalker from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control, and -12, exile all but the bottom card of target player's library. So,
well, the planeswalker in the back is ridiculous.
Sure.
If you don't win the game with that card, something went really, really wrong.
Super wrong. So that said, the front side is fine.
Well, the front side is what you play this for, right? Like, it costs 11 mana to get to the back side. So that one's probably out of the question, but it's not completely out of the question, right? Like, you get to split the payments and, like, it is something that happens in games of Modern, right? Where it's like two Faradex are playing, they both run out of cards, and this one had a Nicol Bolas flipped, whatever.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I honestly think the place that this guy could even realistically see play as the Planeswalker is the Oath of Nyssa. There's an Oath of Nyssa Tron deck that is like the superest of super friends. Because you just, like, it's Tron.
You can't cast it in that deck.
Oath of Nyssa.
Only cast Planeswalkers, right?
Oh, Ripperoni.
No, so, but I still think this card is, like, really playable in Modern, and I think it's because of the card Koligan's Command. The fact that it ETB, it's just a 4/4 flyer, which isn't great stats for Modern. Like, a 4-mana 4/4 flyer in Modern is probably unplayable. But a 4-mana 4/4 flyer that makes your opponent discard a card is interesting. Like, now we're getting to the point where it's like, all right, I'm listening, right? So, like, let's just imagine you went, like, turn three, Cole against command, like, shock your creature, you discard, right? And then you, like, follow it up with a 4-mana 4-4 flyer, they discard. And then they, like, kill your 4-mana 4-4 flyer because they can't let you have a 4-mana 4-4 flyer. And then you're like, all right, Snapcaster, Cole against command, I'm going to get back Nicol Bolas, you discard. And it's like, after a while, like, this just ends up, this just adds up, and they just, like, don't have a hand. And now, like, you have a 4-4 flyer, and you're probably going to kill them with it. And if that's not enough, like, you just keep hitting your land drops, and now you have a Planeswalker that they're never beating. So, like, I don't think this is, like, format-defining. It's not, like, you know, the straight 10 out of 10 or the A-plus in Modern, but I think it is a card that is very good with Cole against Command and could see play because of that reason.
I believe you to a certain extent. I don't know. I just, it's, the casting cost seems really restrictive. The upside of, like, ETB discard a single card, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it doesn't die to Lightning Bolt. It's kind of hard to Fatal Push. Doesn't get Abrupt Decayed.
Yes. I will bet you dollars to donuts there is another 4-mana 4-4 flyer.
It's actually, like, also, it's not embarrassing against Path to Exile. It's, like, not good, but, like, it's not embarrassing. Like, if you play it, they discard a card and then path your thing, you get a land, like, sure. It's fine.
All right, so then you you made a very bold statement in our pre-show, RE, Arcades the Strategist, the bantiest Elder Dragon. He is a 3/5 Flying Vigilance. And whenever a creature with Defender enters the battlefield under your control, draw a card. Each creature you control with Defender assigns combat damage equal to its toughness rather than its power and can attack as though it didn't have Defender. So walk me through this, because I am not seeing it. I mean, I understand what the words say, and I understand what they mean in terms of, like, how the game goes. I don't understand a world in which I would play this card.
Well, the world where you're playing this card probably involves a world where you're also playing the card Wall of Denial and Plume Veil.
I do like a Plume Veil.
And yeah, that's the wall. That's the world where you're playing this card. A 3-mana 8/8 Flying Shroud is a really powerful card.
Yes. Okay. Is an 8/8 Flying Shroud for 3 mana on turn 5?
Whoop. Turn 4. You just, like, Wall of Denial. You can block. Like, they're not getting through your 0/8 Flying Shroud, right? And then you play Arcady's sure. Sabbath, and now you're attacking them for 8 on turn 4.
Okay. I mean, I'm...
It also has when a card with a Defender enters the battlefield, draw a card. Like, sure. That line of text is better than it looks. It's not great, but it's better than it looks. There are good cards with Defender. They exist.
I'll keep looking. Let's see.
Oh, you know the card that's a sweet with? Wall of Omens. Wall of Omens is a sweet magic card.
Sure. All right. So, like, Bant Dirtles with Defenders.
Yes. You've come across the strategy.
Ugh. Oh, Hornet's Nest. That's a thing. Chatty Offshoot. Oy, oy, oy.
Look, I remember one time in Modern, I played against this Doran deck that was also playing Ensnaring Bridge.
Okay, sure.
And it was pretty sweet. Now,
so, I mean, like, Perimeter Captain.
Look, Ensnaring Bridge is a really messed up magic card.
Sure.
And the fact that you can, like, attack with 0/8s as if they were 8/8s, really powerful.
Yeah.
So.
Plume Veil, as we said, 4/4 Flash Flying for 3.
It just eats things.
Something, yeah. Sanctum Plowbeast. Oh, that's very, very expensive.
Yeah, we're getting somewhere.
Do not play it with Souls of the Faultless, because despite Souls of the Faultless being one of my favorite cards of all time, the way that it is worded is...
It should not attack, you don't want that.
Right, whenever Souls of the Faultless is dealt combat damage, you gain that much life, and the attacking player loses that much life. So since you're the attacking player, it negates the life gain. Steel Wall. Hey, one mana, 4/4. Not bad.
Sun Ooh, Sylvan Carried. It's sweet.
Sure.
You can play with Wall of Roots. It's a cool card.
Yeah, I guess. Hey, Thing in the Ice. You can get that sick front side value.
Sure.
Tree Redemption.
Oh, Tree Redemption, sweet. It's just a 4-mana 13/13. It's a thing.
I guess. No, I think realistically, I think like Wall of Omens.
I mean, Wall of Omens is a really good card. Like that's a card that just like sees modern play already, right?
Yeah, like Wall of Omens, Wall of Resurgence. Actually, I like 3-mana 0/6, and when it enters the battlefield, you put 3+1/+1 counters on a land, and it becomes a creature.
Look, so Aaron, here's my thing to be serious with this card for a second is that like the problem with the wall deck historically, like this thing Arcady's Sabbath is doing is actually very powerful for the walls deck, right? Like curving Wall of Denial into this, like a 3-mana 8/8 flying shroud is ridiculous. Like that's not a magic card. Like it shouldn't exist and it doesn't exist for a reason, right?
Correct.
So like that is actually very powerful. The problem with this strategy is that you can't realistically play it because you don't always, like, they actually have Defender on the card. Like, they can't always attack. They just attack when you have this card, right? So it's like, your deck doesn't do anything until you draw Arcady's Sabbath. But, like, we've kind of had this before, where it was like, well, before your deck didn't do anything, and now there's Assault Formation, and, like, now we can kind of attack. And then it's like, I don't think Dorne removes Defender, right? It just makes it deal damage based on toughness.
Correct.
But, like, there are now more of these effects. Like, there's also Arcady's Sabbath now. And it's like, as more and more of these effects get printed, this deck becomes more and more likely to exist, right? So it's like, that card is a real payoff for the strategy. And some of the walls in Modern are actually just very good. Like, Wall of Omens is a really good magic card. Sylvan Carried is, like, a good magic card. Wall of Roots mm-hmm. is a very good magic card.
Sure.
And as more of these creatures get printed that, like, allow them to attack, the strategy becomes more and more realistic. So I don't think Arcady's Sabbath, again, it's not, like, a 10 out of 10 must-play Modern card, but it's really sweet in Commander, and, you know, like, a year or two down the line, like, there could definitely be a home for this in Modern.
All right. We shall see. There's also, like, there's some goblins that I really like, and all kinds of crazy stuff. There's a 4-mana Goblin Lord called, who's the greatest name ever, which is Goblin Trashmaster, and he gives all your goblins +1/+1. And you can sack a goblin to destroy an artifact.
Yes.
Card's great. Magic's great. Everything's great. Before we get to the spice rack, you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/turn1thoughtsies, all spelled out. You can follow us on Twitter @T1Thoughtsies and @A22EN. You can watch a stream at twitch.tv/T1Thoughtsies, sponsored by our friends at Card Hoarder. You can see our YouTube videos at youtube.com/turn1thoughtsies, all spelled out. You can read my columns at blog.cardkingdom.com. You can become a member of the Thoughtseize Cabal at patreon.com/turn1thoughtseize, all spelled out. And you can see all of our content on turn1thoughtseize.com. The spice rack card for this week is Gitu Lava Runner. It's a 1-mana 1/2 for a human wizard, double creature types. And as long as there are 2 or more instant and or sorcery cards in your graveyard, Gitu Lava Runner gets +1/+0 and has haste. Let me tell you about a little deck called Jund Wizards, which is great. So it's not all the way there yet, but it's a lot of the way there. And Gitu Lava Runner is your goblin guide. It's basically a burn deck, but you play this, you play Bob, play Grim Lavamancer, Soulscar Mage, possibly Harsh Mentor, even though he's a cleric. I haven't decided yet. But I streamed this deck with M-Zine, and it was a lot of fun. Felt like it was almost there. This card with...
Well, that girl's awesome, Searing by Blood. The way.
Yeah, she's great.
The truth.
Foil
of the shadow.
Yes. Yeah, I know she loves foil cards. But, I mean, playing this alongside the stuff that Burn already wants to do without, you know, that incremental Goblin Guide advantage that you sort of give up, I felt like this guy was an actual real card. I was not ashamed to play him, even as a 1/2, honestly, like early on, you know, you get in your chip damage and then he gets turned on very easily. I mean, even something like Faithless Looting, you can even turn them on, turn two very easily. So, Gitu Lava Runner, I like him a lot. He's like a little goblin guide. He's goblin guide-esque, but without the downside.
Yeah. I mean, I think this card's good. Definitely has a place in Modern.
Yes, in one specific deck, which is fine, because it only takes one. You only need one spot to find your home.
Sure.
All right, that is all. It is very late.
No, for real. It is.
Yes. It is. Super late. So we're going to get out of here, but we will talk to you next time.
Love you guys.